Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C. I'll be broadcasting from here today and tomorrow. And went to the Eastern Ball last night at Union Station. It was the smallest of the balls and the last one that Barack Obama and Joe Biden showed up at, and he gave a barn burner of about a 10-minute speech, and the essence of his speech was how he can't do a damn thing if we don't get involved, and it's all about us. And I have had now a half a dozen people at least come up to me and say, people who have read my books and listened to my shows over the years, and say, is Barack Obama reading your books? Is he quoting? Have you been advising him? Because he's using your language. And I'm like, no, I think, you know, it's in the air. You know, it's the vibe. So anyhow, I made it to the ball last night, and I actually learned how to tie my own bow tie. You can see the picture of it over at TomHartman.com. Spent 2 hours on YouTube with a video learning how to do that. And had a great time, and you know, it's just amazing. Fox News, of course, is reporting now that Barack Obama is not the president of the United States because John Roberts screwed up the swearing in, and mangled it. I guess didn't quite say it exactly the way the Constitution requires it to be said. And of course, this is a sick joke, but. You know, what can you say? Richard Green is here sitting with me. I wanted to grab you, Richard, as you were walking by. Richard Green, Air American talk show host and bon vivant. You've done many extraordinary things in your life, and your website is,
well, it's richardgreen.org and airamerica.com/clout and wordsthatshooktheworld.com. I wrote a book called Words That Shook the World and have FDR's first inaugural in there, 1933, JFK's inaugural, and I was very much, very much looking forward to yesterday and watching what I think is one of the most transformational beginnings of a presidency, and loved being here. And I just have to say, it's a real honor to be sitting across from my absolute favorite radio talk show host.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a real honor to be sitting here with one of my absolutely favorite people and a great radio talk show host. And, that's weird. Oh, it's not my phone. It's the other phone. I thought, wait a minute. That's
well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And people don't, I don't think people completely understand what an extraordinary Renaissance person you are, and I think.
Well, thank you. But let's talk about Barack Obama instead. Okay.
Well, but you understand Barack Obama at levels that most people don't, which is why I think you're such great radio.
And this is the conversation that I wanted to have with you is about power versus force and this. You and I were talking earlier, and it was just a great riff. And I'm not going to try and do it.
What happened yesterday? And what happened on November 4th was a seismic spiritual evolution for not just the United States, but mankind. My show, Clout, which is on Air America every night from 9 to 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific, focuses a lot on the progressive movement being at its core a spiritual movement. And I don't think that you want to save the trees or the whales or have equality for all people or end poverty unless you have a deeply spiritual, I'm not saying religious, a deeply spiritual mission Otherwise, it would be all about me, which is what you...
And even people who call themselves atheists experience this. I mean, this transcends any of those labels. This is about the awesomeness of aliveness. And
the difference between spirituality and religion.
Exactly. And the point is that Barack Obama, throughout the campaign, when he was going up against John McCain, when he was going up against Hillary Clinton, arguably when he was running for the Senate against Alan Keyes, Barack Obama has always held to the largest frames, the highest values, and has dealt at the level of, to use the terms of this conversation, the spiritual, as it were, without being overt about it, rather than the material, rather than you know, God versus mammon kind of thing. And so these guys are like throwing physical things at him, and they're not hitting him because he's not operating at this physical level. And I realize it sounds a little airy-fairy and new age-ish, but it is an absolute solid thing. The other thing that I got, and I'm curious to hear what he said at the ball that you went to, because he was very, very outspoken at the ball that I went to, you know, in just the bluntest terms, that, you know, he's essentially an empty vessel, that nothing's going to happen unless we get active. He can't do it alone.
Which is exactly the argument that we had on my show about a year ago, and you said it all comes from the people, yep. And I was saying, no, it comes from the leaders. I think it's like nature and nurture. I think it is a combination.
Well, of course. Well, Herbert Hoover was paying no attention to the people, and Franklin Roosevelt did. They both had the same god-awful, horrific circumstances, and the people were equally energized. But you had a leader who was willing to pay attention in Franklin Roosevelt, and you didn't in Herbert Hoover. And that's the difference between George W. Bush and Barack Obama.
And what I felt out on the mall was that this man has ignited people to a whole nother level within themselves to get active, and has lit that flame. Power versus Force, essentially, it's a book by David Hawkins, and it basically says that there are levels of consciousness that we operate on. 1,000 would be the highest level that a human physical being like Jesus or Buddha can be, where they can absorb and live as much of the divine nature as possible in physical form. 0 would be 0 of that.
So that's Dick Cheney.
I'm sorry?
0 is Dick Cheney.
0 or below 0, because I think that's a whole other realm, the satanic realm, which I don't know if Hawkins was talking about. George Bush, between 100 and 200. John McCain, maybe 200, 250. Hillary Clinton in the 300s. But Barack Obama between 500 and 600. And it's like trying to punch a ghost, because his spiritual frequency is so high that no one could attack Barack Obama for 22 months during the campaign. They could only attack his associations, the people who he had associated with.
And
that is why there will not be a honeymoon.
Yeah.
This is a continuous process of loving this man.
Well, and
his energy.
And of warring against it. You know, there is a force, George Bush says there is evil in the world. I mean, John Kyle just came out and said that his speech was not highbrow, it was more lowbrow and a bit surprising. This is the Senate Minority Whip, and a bit surprising in that regard. And he says the speech was not patriotism. Here's the exact statement from Kyle. He says, if the idea is we have to avoid controversy by getting in line behind his proposals, that's not patriotism. If he's asking that everybody agree with him and thereby have a truce, that's not going to work. The war has already begun.
What did he say that one could not agree with completely?
He took exception, John Kyle took exception to Obama's call for, quote, an end to petty grievances, end quote.
Oh, we want petty grievances.
That's right. That's what John Kyle wants.
So Republicans, the party of petty grievances.
Right. At the ball last night, I had a conversation with somebody who was pretty politically wired in and who said, what did you think of the speech? And I said, I thought it's going to be iconic. And she said, but, you know, there was no, you know, Kennedy, ask not what you can do for your country moment
in there. No repeatable mantra, right?
And I said, you know, I was only 7 years old in 1960. I was 9 years old in 1960. So I don't remember the speech as, you know, dissecting the speech. But my understanding is that at the time that speech was given, there was not a lot of, oh, my God, did you hear him say that? That what has happened is that over the decades, we have come to understand the importance and consequence of that, and that comment has been excerpted out and used iconically to promote a whole series of agendas and to say things about this country. And I think that there were at least three or four moments in Barack Obama's speech yesterday that will, 10 years, 30 years, 50 years, 100 years. I mean, let's keep in mind, this is not a political speech. This was an inaugural address. There have been 44 of these only. I mean, he was standing on the shoulders of George Washington in this, not you know, just politics. I think that there was at least three or four, maybe more, of those moments, those sentences, and the end of petty grievances, frankly, is a piece of it, that will be pulled out over time and will be played over and over again, and that future generations, our children, grandchildren, will be saying.
I'd love to know which ones you think those are, because I have my own list too.
I need to spend some more time with the speech, frankly, and but I know, just sitting there listening to it, I was just going, oh yeah, yeah.
The more you watch Barack Obama, the more you like him. The more you listen to that speech,
I agree. Richard Green, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Great talking with you this morning.
Happy
we'll be right
Obama.
Back. Thank you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but it's one thing that every man over the age of 30 should know about, an enlarged prostate. Prostate enlargement can cause frequent urination and even sexual problems. So between getting up in the middle of the night to urinate and possible sexual problems, an enlarged prostate becomes a giant pain in the... Well, you get the idea. Now, what if I told you there was an all-natural way to help your body keep your prostate healthy? There is. It's called Beta Prostate, and it's an all-natural prostate vitamin. No crazy medications with strange side effects, just a natural supplement that helps maintain your prostate. Beta Prostate has proven ingredients that target and feed your prostate with healthy nutrients. If you're over the age of 30, be proactive in keeping your prostate in good health. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Your health is too important to wait, so call now, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. January is National Eye Care Month, a time when many of us use our new health insurance plans to get our eyes checked. Sadly, millions of people around the world don't have this luxury. This month, stop by Eyes on Broadway and donate your old glasses, which will be redistributed when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru this March to perform eye exams for those less fortunate. A great way to start out the new year. Donate your old glasses at 2300 Northeast Broadway or learn more at eyesonbroadway.com.
Hey, thought you were making breakfast.
I am, with McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
How is that making breakfast?
I'm mixing and matching, you know, putting breakfast together.
We're on a budget.
They're a dollar each. You know, I can't bake warm biscuits or sizzle sausage for that.
True.
I can't put real fruit in yogurt or make crispy hash browns for a buck.
You're so right.
Make your own morning and choose from 6 wallet-friendly favorites on McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
This was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I do have my moments.
Breakfast served during breakfast hours only.
Wait a minute. No, she didn't just jump me in line. It is way too early. excuse me. excuse me. But I know you saw me standing here.
Girl, you are lucky I had a sweet McGriddles and orange juice this morning. Because if I hadn't, whoo, it'd be on.
Start your mornings off on the right track with breakfast from McDonald's. A Southern-style chicken biscuit or McGriddle sandwich is enough to put anyone in a good mood and set a positive tone for your day.
TurboTax presents a message from Andrew Jackson.
Well, hello. This is your $20 bill speaking, and I want to give you a little tax advice. It'll only take a minute because I can sum it up in two words. Use TurboTax. See, with TurboTax, you get expert advice and online help to get you the maximum refund you're entitled to. In other words, you'll see a whole lot of me and a bunch of Benjamins. I mean, come on. The guy wasn't even president.
TurboTax. Choose easy. Get started at TurboTax.com.
Sure, you can incorporate a business, make a will, file a trademark on LegalZoom.com. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars, and yes, it's fast. But what about quality? The Wall Street Journal tested LegalZoom. They created a last will and testament and then had it reviewed by a law school professor who declared it airtight. LegalZoom isn't a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. And for even more savings on most products, enter Brilliant in the referral box at checkout. Visit LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
It's a new day in America. It truly is. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And David Madland is with me. He is the director of the American Worker Project for the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, of course, that website. David, welcome to the show.
Tom, thanks very much for having me.
Very, very pleased to have you here with us. You need to get just a little closer to the mic, but if you get too close, it starts popping, but that's great. David, the American Worker Project, give us the basis of this.
Well, it's about making sure workers have the things they need to get ahead, good jobs, good wages, health care, retirement, all the things that sort of are the foundation of a middle-class society.
Yeah. And it seems to me that if we want to talk about stimulating the economy, for example, or any of these kind of things, you know, the prime driver of an economy is demand, and demand, well over 90% of the source of all demand is wages. I mean, it's just really simple. When people are earning money, they spend that money. That creates demand, which creates entrepreneurial opportunities and business opportunities, and which can be met by supply, by the manufacturing and productivity. And we are losing, we are hemorrhaging jobs, and frankly have been for 30 years as a consequence of 30 years of insane economic policies, Reaganomics, trickle-down economics. You know, they thought they could turn the laws of economics on their head and say, oh, demand doesn't matter, it's all about supply. We now know that it's nonsense, it's false, it's a lie. So how do we, you know, short of the obvious, the two obvious things to me are, number one, jack up the minimum wage, get more money in people's pockets, that's going to stimulate demand, and get it to a reasonable level. And you know, reasonable people differ on what that would be, but I think, you know, at least $13, $14 an hour. And number two, the Employee Free Choice Act. Let's as Canada, you know, in Canada they've got card check, and they got about 35% unionization. We're at 7% unionization in the private sector. What am I missing here? What else is on your agenda?
Well, you certainly hit on two fundamental things that are necessary to give workers the power they need to get ahead and the power to drive the economy. We also are missing a major recovery package that currently President Obama has been talking with Congress about that'll create jobs and make the kind of investments that can create further economic growth. And so the alternative energy, investments in alternative energy, roads, bridges, healthcare, education. So that you also need a package that deals with those kind of long-term challenges, but also helps jumpstart the economy right away by creating jobs. Because as you know, the economy's lost over 2 million jobs just in the past year. So we need to start rebuilding those jobs, and then we want to make sure that these are good jobs. And you started to talk about two of the key ways to make sure they're good jobs, which is a big increase in the minimum wage, and then making it easier for workers to join unions, because when workers are able to join together in unions, they're able to bargain for higher wages and benefits, which is important not just for those workers, but then other companies start to try to compete on a higher playing field. So this has a sort of a virtuous cycle throughout the economy that wages continue to rise.
Yeah, in the late 70s, when 25% of our workforce was unionized, roughly 50% of our workforce had the kind of job where one person working could raise a family, buy a house, buy a car every couple of years, have a pension, have a retirement, and have health insurance. And now that we're down to 7% unionized, I'm guessing we're probably about 15% of the workforce has that kind of a job.
you're just about right on your figures and in your story. Yeah, there are studies that talk about sort of quality jobs. How many are those in the economy? And you know, things that are measures of quality would be that it has health care, it has retirement benefits, it pays enough to live and provide a decent opportunity for your family to go to college, for example. Been cut in half in the past 30 years about, and so you're right.
You know who laid that out? Teddy Roosevelt. In a speech that Thomas Edison recorded, Teddy Roosevelt said, "We stand for a living wage. A living wage has," he invented that phrase. "A living wage has to be enough to provide for morality." In other words, you don't have people. I mean, we had a story, I think it was in Oregon, where a guy walked into a bank and said, I need food. You know, this is a stick up." And they gave him a stack of money. He just pulled one $100 bill off the stack. And then the next day he turned himself into the police department and said, I just can't live with myself about this. This guy just got 15 years in prison. Bernie Madoff is, sitting in a million-dollar apartment. I mean, our values are so weird. But anyhow, enough to provide for morality, enough to put to provide for education to your children, enough to set aside enough for retirement and old age, enough to care for the family during times of sickness, and enough for recreation and vacation. I mean, that was Roosevelt. He summarized it all in 20 seconds, and we're still fighting that battle.
That was the basis of the American middle class that made America the sort of envy of the world for much of the 20th century, is that we were able to make that a reality, that living wage a reality for most American workers. And unfortunately, that's become too hard is a reality for too few people. Yeah. And so now what we're seeing with President Obama is an opportunity to reverse the kinds of policies that made it too hard and too scarce for good jobs.
And I think it can get very simple. Employee Free Choice Act, roll back the Reagan tax.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
So this morning, Dr. Sharon Watkins, the General Minister and President of the Disciples of Christ, and by the way, a tip of the hat to Fred 42 and Sue Nethercutt in our chat room for pointing this out to me, at the National Prayer Service, the first woman to deliver the sermon at the inauguration National Prayer Service, spoke of the responsibilities and choices the new president faces. She said, quote, "Someone has to stand watch and be ready to defend, and Mr. President, tag, you're it." End of quote. From the National Prayer Service. They're using my lines. I love it. I love it. And as I said, obviously it's not my line. It's an old cliche that we've been using on this show for going on seven. It'll be 7 years in another 5-6 weeks. But it is just wonderful. It is a wonderful day in America. 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, Cal in South Carolina. Hey, Cal, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just want to remind everybody about the Gettysburg Address. Well, who was Lincoln's secretary? I think it was, the guy's name was Allison.
Lincoln's Secretary of State was, I'm sorry, Seward, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Okay. But I believe he gave an hour-long speech right before Lincoln went on. Lincoln goes on, hits the nail on the head in 2 minutes, to the point where some of the people there were almost insulted.
Well, at the time, the Gettysburg Address was panned in the press as being
right.
as being an insult because it was so short. And now we look back on it, and, I mean, I memorized it as part of civics class in fifth grade. I mean, it's
that's cool. But I'm just, you know, everybody, I think that speech that Barack gave knocked it out of the park once again, but everybody, they wanted more, but I'll tell you, in the weeks and months and years to come, I mean, every single paragraph of that speech was just a gem.
Yep.
And I don't know, you know, when you know, Kennedy's Ask Not speech and everything, I think this just blows away. I can't think of a better, maybe Eisenhower's, you know, warning.
His farewell address. Yeah, Eisenhower's farewell address was that, and his speech to the National Association of Newspaper Editors, what's referred to as the Cross of Iron speech, where he talked about how many barrels of wheat and how many cities could be built with the cost of one destroyer. Yes, iconic speeches. I agree with you, Cal. Well said, and thank you very much for calling and saying it. This is going to go down in history as one of the great and iconic inaugural addresses. It's just going to take a little parsing, and it's going to take some time, but it is, and it was. It was absolutely brilliant. Wayne in Connecticut. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind?
Cal, how are you doing?
Just great. Just great. I'm recovering from you know, a couple of days of just insanity. What's up, Wayne?
You were talking a while ago about one of the themes was how we all have to work together. And it reminded me of the first time I heard Obama speak, the 2004 keynote address where I said there's no red states, blue states, just the United States. So
yes.
It's been a pretty constant theme, and it's one that we need, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and well said. This has always been the song this guy sang, and you go back and you read his autobiography and you get it that this is how, and perhaps he's uniquely qualified for this. I mean, you know, having grown up as a biracial kid and having lived in both worlds racially, having seen the whole spectrum of America politically, having lived inside and outside the United States, it's well. I'm wandering into gushiness, which I think is enough of that already. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave.
Thanks, Tom. If not now, when? Happy New Year.
Yeah, thank you. Happy New Year. Yeah, it's like the new year just began, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The new century.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
The question. I have questions and concern. I don't have enough time or context, and I come to you. For that, the question came up or concern in a statement by a Pastor Rick Warren, and it was this: is it perhaps sinister for the future, or what type of a mindset allows this? Is it illness? And it's this statement: God, please forgive us for killing the innocent.
I'd need to go back and read Rick Warren's invocation. I mean, I was there, and I, you know, just 30 paces from him, and heard it. And frankly, I thought there was a little bit of showboating. You know, he was doing his preacher routine a little more than the ceremony probably called for. But that's, I don't mean that even really, frankly, as a criticism. I would guess, I mean, Rick Warren was a major enabler of Republicans. That, and this is just, you know, a wild psychobabble guess, so, but that he perhaps feels some responsibility for the hundreds of thousands, perhaps as many as a million innocent men, women, and children in Iraq and surrounding areas who died as a consequence of the absolutely unnecessary war.
That it may have been a beautiful statement on his behalf.
It may have been a genuine his begging for forgiveness for his role and the nation's role in these horrors. It may well have been. I don't see it as sinister. Rick Warren. I think he's an opportunist at times. I think he's a showman. I guess those are some of the qualities actually that enable you to become a megachurch pastor for better or for worse. And I'm pretty ambivalent about even the existence of megachurch pastors, but at least of the Rick Warren variety. But
thank you for the context, Tom.
You're welcome, Dave. Thanks for the call. But I don't think that he's at his core a bad person, an evil person. I think he's misguided, particularly with his positions on gays. And hopefully this has become one of those moments when he learns things, when he wakes up, when he is enlightened. Candy Stroud just dropped by, and I want to invite her onto the show here. Candy Stroud used to work with the Democratic National Committee. Say it again.
After I left the Democratic National Committee, after 10 years of doing their radio communications and knowing wonderful people like you, I started my own communications company where I do communications for progressives and help progressives get their messages out. And it's called Stroud & Associates. Yeah. And I did the Democratic Convention, as you know, last summer, and the convention in 2004 and 2000.
And all of these radio rows that I've been doing for all these years, you have been the person who has put these things together. You know, Ellen puts together the infrastructure. You put together the software, as it were, the guests, the people, and everything. And thank you so much for that, Candy. You are a gem and just
thank
one of my
you,
favorite
Tom.
People, too.
Yeah, you know,
and
it's fun to do.
And we saw each other at the ball last night. It was really, really nice
I
to see you.
I danced for 2 hours at the ball.
Holy cow.
I went out on the dance floor because the group that we were with didn't really dance so much.
Uh-huh.
So I went out on the dance floor to see if there was anybody. Sometimes, you know, people will dance together that don't know each other.
Yeah.
And there were two women dancing kind of together, side by side. Two black women. One turned out to be a classmate of Michelle and Barack Obama's from Harvard Law School.
Oh, my.
The other one turned out to be a communications professor at the University of Arizona. And the other one turned out to be the daughter of the communication professor's was her best friend. So there are three black women and me, and we were all out dancing for 2 hours on the floor last night, the electric slide. And it was the only time I've gone to so many inaugural balls. That one was really exceptional, and people actually had a good time.
Yeah, it was. It was a party. It was, and you know, Renewing America's Promise was everywhere, and people really took it seriously.
My son ran that inaugural ball.
Really?
In 1996. Lindsey Stroud. Uh-huh. He was at the in the Clinton White House.
Right.
And so he ran that ball, and I, with all due respect to Lindsey, it was a fabulous ball, but there were so many people, twice as many as last night. Number one, number two. It was loud and it was freezing cold out there. It wasn't the same ambiance as there was last night. Last night was a smaller group, purposely structured that way because there are more balls.
Yeah, I think there was
the
like
city.
1,600 people in the ball that we were at.
Compared
that you and
to
I were at.
Maybe 5,000, 6,096.
Right.
So some of those balls were really packed, but last night it was a manageable size, so you could actually enjoy it. You know. Anyway, go ahead, Tom.
Well, I'm just curious. You've been, you know, inside the Democratic Party. You've been in Democratic circles for a long, long time. You're, you know, used to pop up on TV all the time and with thoughts and observations. I'm going to ask you to play pundit in the minute that we have here before we have to take this break. What's your take on what happened in the last 24 hours? What it means for America?
Oh, it's a paradigm shift. I think the country has moved now to a higher level of consciousness, literally. There is a new spirit moving in America. There's a new spirit, and you literally saw the Bush era literally shut down, shut off, and sent away because people in this country want something better. They don't want that. They don't want to be perceived as bad people who create bad wars that aren't, you know, that are based
people.
On falsity.
Yeah.
They want a higher level of consciousness. They want to come together. They want to unite. They don't want this Congress that's divided. They don't want people divided. They really want what Barack Obama has suggested, and that is, you know, we are not red states and blue states. We are the United States of America. We've moved to a higher level of consciousness.
That's brilliant. And I'm hearing that from so many people, that this is not about physicalness. It's not about force. It's not about, we're in charge now.
Mm-hmm.
It's about literally a transformation of the heart and mind.
I felt it.
And the spirit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Candy Stroud, Stroud & Associates, is there a website for that?
It's stroudandassociates.com.
.com. Thank you very much, Candy. Thanks for being with us.
Tom, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Whatever lies ahead.
And we are ready to lead once more.
You'll hear about it here.
On this day, we gather because we have chosen hope over fear, unity of purpose over conflict and discord.
We're fighting the good fight.
We come to proclaim an end to the petty grievances and false promises, the recriminations and worn-out dogmas that for far too long have strangled our politics.
AM 620, KPOJ.
Dear Mom and Dad, well, the Army has finally seen fit to give me some time off, so I'm writing to tell you that I'm doing fine over here. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. Can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. To find out how you can help, visit us at uso.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
So, what are you going to do this weekend?
Well, I've made up my list of the top-rated TVs, so now I'm going to go to all the stores and check out their prices.
You're going to go to Best Buy and Circuit City and Costco and Fry's and...
I know, it's a lot of work, but how else do I figure out the best places to buy a TV?
You could check the latest consumer ratings.
They rated stores?
Yes, they did. Stores were rated for price and selection and service and even checkout speed.
Great! Those ratings will save me a lot of time. Who won?
For buying a TV, the top-rated stores in this area were video only.
Really? Video only was rated higher than Best Buy and Circuit City?
Yep. I guess all that don't be sorry stuff is true.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or computers, but you will find the best deals on HD TVs, Blu-rays, cameras, camcorders, and home theater systems. Shop around. Just make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't,
you'll be sorry.
In Jansen Beach, Clackamas, Beaverton, and Salem. Video only.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end, and when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. And, the inauguration is still ringing in our ears. We'll be talking about it throughout the day. Terry Jeffrey is going to join us for a short while at the beginning of the next hour. And in our third hour, Ken Davis is going to drop by, the historian, just to give us a little historical context. But by and large, This is a classic moment, and the trashing of Barack Obama has already begun. You know, some of these very, very small-minded, petty, pathetically petty, frankly, Republicans in the United States Senate putting a 24-hour hold on Hillary Clinton's coming into office. I mean, this is just it's tragic. It's really tragic. I lack a word beyond that. Hack in Missouri. Hey, Hack. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, David Vitter's protest over her confirmation in the committee. I mean, I found that nothing short of comedic.
Yes. Well said.
What I call to talk about is, yeah, the Obama hatred is still alive and well. You know, driving in southeastern Missouri, caricature of Obama in a hijab, saying that he equals, more gay marriage, more abortions. Didn't abortions go up during the Bush administration?
Yeah, and they went down during the Clinton administration. And it's been pretty well demonstrated that if you want to reduce the number of abortions in America, the most effective way to do it is to increase the number of people who are practicing birth control, to have fewer unwanted pregnancies.
And I also heard that Flow News was the only news agency that covered Bush's homecoming in Midland, Texas.
That doesn't surprise me. By the way, one of the folks, Tess, in the chat room says that they went through the transcript of Rick Warren's address, and apparently he didn't ask for forgiveness for killing innocents. So perhaps our previous caller was wrong. Hack, thanks for the heads up. And, yeah, the hates – you know, John Kennedy, when he showed up in Dallas, when he was assassinated, there was a full page ad, as I recall. I remember seeing the ad. It bordered in black. I mean, there were these impeach Earl Warren signs all over there. There was, Republicans, like, they're about hatred. I just don't know how to say it beyond that. It's tragic. It's just tragic. Henry in Washington, D.C. Hey, Henry.
How you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Man, I tell you what, don't you ever hate being wrong? I mean, hate being right all the time.
I'm not right all the time.
I listened to you at first with you and that other guest that you had that wrote the book and talking about on the spiritual level and things like that. And I turned to some other, conservative stations to hear what they got to say and stuff. And I said, what do? All they talked about is they couldn't talk about Obama. So what they do, they talk about, his presidency is going to be all about doing what he did last night, hanging out with movie stars, just like you said, guilt by association.
Yeah.
And then they talk about, the movie star actors are $20 million a year people, per movie. And he said these people are immoral, and they're the ones that creating the immorality of our society. And these are the people this president is hanging out with. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I just got through listening to Tom and heard what he said. And it makes no sense for these people to go this route because they can't make it stick.
Yeah, well, and not only that. Their argument, if their argument is that rich people are bad, they should have a real problem with George W. Bush, who was born with a multi-million-dollar trust fund, and Dick Cheney, who became worth, arguably as much as $100 million through Halliburton. I mean, they don't have to hang out with millionaires; they are millionaires.
You're right, exactly. But the Hollywood millionaires are not in their particular group. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's they're the people that those guys love to hate. So well said, Henry. Henry, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you, Dan in Boston. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today? Hey,
good.
Continuing with that guy's last point on your gravestone, it may read something like this: I thought I was wrong once, but I was wrong. That being said, the one line from that speech class yesterday that just absolutely overwhelmed me was when he said, we're going to pull ourselves up, we're going to dust ourselves off, and we're going to go on with the challenges we have ahead. I'll tell you what, I had goosebumps up and down my body, my hair stood up, and I said, anything you ask me to do, I'm there for you. I mean, it was an overwhelming moment for me.
Yep.
So I'm
going to
do great, great, great radio, and I'm just honored to listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much for the call, too. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff.
I was really thrilled that you were actually talking about Power versus Force today. I was just rereading that book. And yesterday my siblings and I were talking about how Obama shows signs of understanding. It's thrilling to see in a president. In Dreams, my father, how he spoke of really seeing the people live vertically.
Mm-hmm.
the church and so forth. And it's not this horizontal life of just changing circumstances, but it's changing being.
Right.
And in Power versus Force, I mean, that's one of those books that, a lot of books change your thoughts, but this one actually changes the way you feel.
Yeah.
And I recommend everybody, even if you can just skim the book and look at page 146 where Hawkins has a list of words that I use all the time as an evaluative tool to see how I'm living it. It's negative words versus positive words. So like, you can look at, like, for example, abundant versus excessive.
Hmm.
Harmonious versus disruptive. And you see these words when you look at, like, harmonious versus disruptive. You can see a lot of the negative words actually describe the way the cons have been guiding us for years.
Sure, sure.
And you see things like Obama, accepting, reject versus rejecting, admitting versus denying.
Yeah.
This list of words is just two pages long, and it's just marvelous.
Yeah, and this is about, at the core of it, at the base of it, what the Obama presidency and this transformation, I think, for the world, and this his reaching out specifically to Muslims, but reaching out right across the board, is all about real power, as opposed to clumsy blunt force.
Which I also liked when we talk about real power. It's like Thich Nhat Hanh came out of the book this year, which finally, to me, said it, where we've talked about soft power versus hard power.
Yeah.
Thich Nhat Hanh finally called it true power.
There you go. Well said. Jeff, always great to hear from you. Thanks for calling. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live from Radio Row here in Washington, D.C., the day after the inaugural event. Fox News questioning whether Barack Obama is the president. It is so weird. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at BetterWorldClub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you from Washington. Ephesians, as I recall, was it the sixth chapter? Anyhow, in Ephesians, Paul writes about, he says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, rulers, and powers. Powers and rulers, something close to that. Yesterday, Harvey Kay pointed out to me that Barack Obama quoted from Thomas Paine, my favorite of the revolutionary fathers, as it were, when he said, let it be told of the future world that in the depth of winter, when nothing but hope and virtue could survive, that the city and the country, alarmed at one common danger, came forth to meet and repulse it. Terry Jeffrey is with us. Terry is the editor-in-chief of CNS News. CNSnews.com, the website. And Terry, first of all, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm well. I'm giddy. but the reason I opened with those two quotes, Paul's comment in Ephesians, in particular, is that I sat yesterday about 60 or 70 feet away from Bush and Cheney during the swearing-in ceremony. I mean, I was sitting at the same level, not down on the ground in front of them, but right there, right next to all the members of Congress, and maybe 100 feet away from Barack Obama. And Cheney was sitting there with his hat on and his wheelchair, scowling through most of the thing. And I got this feeling that there was a passing of, I'm very reluctant to use the word evil, Terry, and I'm extremely reluctant to apply it to any human being. I'm although, I think we'd probably agree on people like Ted Bundy or Adolf Hitler, but it just seemed like a dark force was there, and that the people around them got it, and that when they left, the sun came out. You wrote a piece over at CNSNews.com called "The War Bush is Losing is Not in the Middle East." And one of the very last sentences, where the blame truly lies is with him, Bush. You know, you say Bush blamed Americans first, where the blame truly lies with him. And I just would love to hear your thoughts on, I guess, you know, the arc of that little riff that I just dropped on you.
Well, I mean, first let me say, Tom, I think that President Bush and Vice President Cheney are decent human beings and try to do their best. And I reject any characterization of them as evil. And I think they did do some good things and they did do some bad things. The column that you're talking about, I was referring to President Bush's failure to secure our southern border, and particularly in light of the drug trafficking that comes across our border, which according to the National Drug Threat Assessment that was put up by the Justice Department last month and got very little press notice, has become the number one criminal threat, the number one criminal organized crime threat to the United States today, according to the Justice Department, are Mexican drug cartels operating inside the United States. And that's in part a function of the lack of security at the border. My point was simply that was an area where George Bush failed. There are other areas where I think he did well.
We've had 30 years now, Terry, of conservative economic policies by and large. And the consequence is that we are more than $10 trillion, that's 10,000 billion, 10 million, million dollars in debt. We are, I would say, broke. The economy has been falling. The wages of working people are falling. We have a healthcare system that is the laughingstock of the world, that is terribly dysfunctional. We have one out of eight people in the United States are living below the poverty line. And how can we look at these? I mean, this is the same thing that happened, by the way, in the 20s. I mean, it seems that every time the Republicans take over, we get bubble and bust economies and devastation that the Democrats have to come clean up.
Well, I would I would contest your characterization that we've had 30 years of conservative economic policies that are responsible for the problems you talk about. It. First of all, since 1932, when Franklin Roosevelt was elected, till now, most of that time, the Congress of the United States has been controlled by the Democratic Party. In fact, there's a stretch there of 45 years prior to 1994 when the Democrats controlled the Congress, including during the entire 8 years when President Reagan was in office.
Well, you notice, Terry, I didn't say Republican.
Ooh,
I put Bill Clinton in that camp. I put a lot of members of Congress in that camp, people who believed that we should turn over the sovereignty of this country to 100 corporations, the World Trade Organization, that busting trade unions was just a fine thing, thank you very much, that jacking up profits for, you know, the whole supply side thing. I mean, there's Democrats who believe in that nonsense, too.
Like John F. Kennedy.
Well, no, as a matter of fact, no. John Kennedy proposed increasing taxes, and I think I've played that clip for you before, have I not?
John F. Kennedy, in fact, cut the marginal tax rates.
Right, and I don't have the cable to feed my computer into the system here right now. But go back and listen to the second debate. I play it on the air all the time. The second debate between Kennedy and Nixon, and Kennedy pointed out that nobody he knew was paying 90% taxes, even though the top rate was for people who earned more than, in today's dollars, $3.2 million, was 91%. And he said, our goal is to increase tax revenues. He said gain revenues. He came right out and said it. We're going to gain revenues by dropping the rate from 91 to 74% and closing loopholes so that the wealthy people of this country will pay more in taxes. And then he went on to list all the things he was going to use that money for, how he was going to spend it for education, he was going to spend it to balance the budget, to pay down the budget deficit, and so on. Jack Kennedy was calling for a tax increase on people making more than $3 million a year. And at the very end, he said, Mr. Nixon constantly misstates my position, but I want to have it on the record, and here it is.
Well, you know,
and I'll tell you, Republicans are still misstating his position.
Interesting historical fact is that Arthur Laffer, who was one of the main supply-side economists who argued that if you have a high level of taxation, you actually drop the marginal income tax rates – federal revenue will go up. And, in fact, when the marginal tax rates were cut in the early 60s, when they were cut in the early 80s, when they were cut in the early part of this decade, there was, in fact, an increase in federal revenue. None of those tax cuts caused a diminution in federal revenue. They led to an increase in federal
revenue. But, Terry, the same is true of every tax increase. I mean, that's a meaningless statistic. The fact of the matter is the economy grows by 2 or 3% a year on average, 3.2% on average during Democratic administrations, 2.6% during Republican. The economy grows, the population grows, inflation increases the number of dollars. If all this revenue is so great, why do we have a $10 trillion deficit?
You can just simply look at the historical budget tables of the United States. It's very simple. No matter how much the revenue goes up, Congress spends more than the revenue coming in.
But what I'm saying is that Arthur Laffer was a crackpot. He was wrong. He was a friggin' crackpot, Terry. Come on. Every time, go back to 1919. You had a top tax rate of over 80%. In 1921, it was dropped by a Republican president down to 25%. What did you get? You got a bubble economy. You got a bubble economy that led to a crash. You had the exact same thing that happened when Reagan dropped taxes. Anytime the top marginal tax rate goes below 50%, what you get is a situation who are running small and medium-sized businesses in particular, they're looking at that and they're saying, you know, I could keep that money in my business, I could buy some more equipment, or I could take it and I could go out and invest, try to make money with money. And when the tax rates are below 50%, they say, I'm going to make money with money, and you get a bubble economy. Terry, if you can prove me wrong, I'll buy you dinner.
Look, Tom, the only possible way that you can spur economic growth is by giving people an incentive to invest their money.
No, the only possible way that you can spur economic growth is by increasing wages.
The historical fact is the economy grows when you cut taxes.
The economy grows when you raise taxes, too.
You can kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
But, Terry, go back. Look at 100 years' worth of tax history. When taxes have been raised, revenues have gone up more than when they were cut. And the economy has gotten stronger.
No. That's simply not true.
I'm telling you.
It's simply not true.
Drop me an email. I'll send you the stats.
You had high taxation under the Carter years, and you had low economic growth. You had low taxation under Reagan, and you had high economic growth.
That high taxation under the Carter years was from 1935 until 1980. And during that period of time, we had stronger economic growth than we have ever had in the history of this country, Terry. Ever. I'm sorry. The music started, and I like to let you have the last word. We'll do it again. Terry Jeffrey, CNSNews.com. Thanks for coming on, Terry.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
You ever have one of those days where everything goes right? First, I get the best parking space at work. Tonight, I have a date with the very lovely Rachel. And today, I gave a killer presentation in Sydney, finalized a contract in London, and demoed our new product in Boston. Online, from my desk, with WebEx. WebEx lets me take meetings and give presentations from my desk. I just talk to clients on the phone, and they watch what's happening on my desktop from their desktop. So I can travel the world and still be here for my date tonight with Rachel.
Travel less, meet online. Go to WebEx.com and try WebEx free. Just click the radio graphic and enter promo code BLUE to get a free trial and a free retractable VoIP headset, too. Remember that code, BLUE. To qualify for the free VoIP headset, WebEx, now part of Cisco, used by over 5.5 million people every month. Give it a try, free. Go to WebEx.com and enter the promo code BLUE, WEBEX.com. Free headsets available while supplies last. Terms and restrictions apply. See website for...
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout?
I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself, so there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country...
3 to 6.
You are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
And 620KPOJ.com.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. Now, we'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a 40-year-old man on blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price? $20 a month.
Thanks, Joel. See how affordable term life insurance can be for you. Call 1-800-300-6619. That's 1-800-300-6619. Or go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health and other factors. Not available in all states.
Referrals. Simple word, right? To a small business, referrals are solid gold. So how do you stir them up? Email marketing from ConstantContact.com. With Constant Contact, you get easy-to-use templates to showcase your business with photos and coupons. And best of all, it's easy for your customers to pass them along to others. In other words, help you generate the almighty referral. Plans as low as $15 a month. Get your free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com. And let the referrals begin.
All right, construction crews, everybody ready?
Ready in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Honolulu. Oh, who's in Honolulu?
It's Tim from Boston. I just got transferred to Hawaii.
Wicked good weather they got here.
Buy one Motorola i576 phone for $69.99. Get up to four free with Sprint, the fastest national push-to-talk network. Call 1-800-NEXTEL-9. Only on the Now Network. Fastest based on initial call setup time. Offers for eligible business accounts only. See Sprint stores for availability. Ends 4/18/09. Subject to 2-year agreement. Up to $36 activation, $200 early termination fees. Credit approval and deposit per line. Restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at BeavertonLodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
We talked about it yesterday, as I recall, or perhaps the day before, in a sort of abstract fashion. What if everybody got together and filed a class action lawsuit against the Bush administration and the general crazies in the Bush administration and Henry Paulson and company for misusing the TARP funds? And it's been done. In the United States District Court of the Southern District of Indiana, one fellow, I'm sorry I don't have his name here, has filed a lawsuit challenging the legality of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act of 2008, wherefore plaintiff asked this court to declare that the benefits have violated the public trust in the United States Constitution and its fiduciary duty to American taxpayers, to declare that Congress's disbursements of public funds to any bank or holding company are stopped until facts about how the money has been spent to this time have been and so on. It goes through, basically the list that I guess you would all expect that it would go through. So, anyhow, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room. I'm able to get in there, although I can't watch it while I'm also screening calls, so I've got to alternate back and forth. I drop into the chat room generally during the breaks. And we don't have our free live webcam today that we normally have, the TomVision, over at AirAmerica.com, simply because I'm out of town and there's no camera here. But anyhow, that's that. Michael in the Bronx, New York. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Just great. What's up?
What a beautiful inauguration it was yesterday. And I got to say that, two things about it. Number one, I should say three things. Number one, I was a bit in tears, and we had our own Obama support party here in New York City at a karaoke where we sang songs that were befitting of Obama's message, like Ain't No Stopping Us Now, Rising to the Top, and a whole bunch of other inspirational songs. Mm-hmm. I was also impressed by the fact that there were zero arrests down in D.C. because I feared of a repeat of what happened here in New York City the night Barack Obama won the election. There was a section down in Manhattan where people went out and exclaimed their joy over Obama's victory. But nearby were a bunch of cops in riot gear. They automatically stormed towards the Obama supporters, saying, get off the street, stop disturbing the peace, so forth and so on. We got calls saying that you were disturbing the peace. And as soon as one cop started pushing another supporter, everyone got their cell phone cameras out. And some of the cops were heard saying, get that effing camera out my face and slap that phones, try to slap the phones out of the supporters' hands. Mm-hmm. But they were all caught on video. The latest I heard is that they're still deciding to file charges and file suit against the NYPD, but figure to do it after Obama gets into office because they figured that a Bush administration DOJ wasn't going to do it.
Right.
And the third thing is that, I guess you probably spoke about it, the stupid statement made by Chris Wallace on Fox News Channel. He claimed that Barack Obama may not be president because of the flubs made in the administration, even though Chief Justice John Roberts messed it up. The thing is that since he messed it up, the oath cannot be received in a perfect fashion, so it could be null and void. When he fails to realize that the 20th Amendment automatically states, I guess in a nutshell, that at 12 noon, Inauguration Day, the new president, the president-elect, takes power.
Right.
And so I find that absolutely irresponsible of Chris Wallace.
We just have to take these guys as the jokes they are. You know, Keith Olbermann referring to Bill O'Reilly as Bill the Clown. I mean, it's perfect. It's a clown outfit. But Michael, here's an interesting thing. John Roberts was an appointment of Bush, and Barack Obama, in fact, voted against his confirmation. And although I don't think that there is anything personal going on there, but he was an appointment of Bush, and so like the very that was literally the last thing that the Bush administration had anything to do with making happen was having their appointee, do the inaugural whatever you call it, you know, the swearing in ceremony, having him swear in the president, and he screwed it up, and it's like every Bush appointee has screwed up everything, and I just thought it was like, you know, so. Such a metaphor for the entire 8 years of the Bush administration. Like, none of them can do anything right. They can't even swear in the next president right.
Tom, do you know how dangerous that is, though, given how there were so many anti-Obama protesters during the campaign, some of them calling for his head, as you know, in the Sarah Palin rallies?
Yeah.
I mean, for Chris Wallace to make a joke like that, they could, these anti-Obama people could seize upon that moment.
I get it, Michael. Yeah, no, I understand it, and it is a serious thing. Thank you, Michael, for the call. The other thing I just wanted to share with you very quickly is that last night at the balls and yesterday at the inauguration, I did not see the mutant Ninja Turtles that were all over Minneapolis for the Republican convention. At the Republican convention, everywhere you went and around everybody were these guys who were dressed like the stormtroopers out of Star Wars, you know, with the super sophisticated weapons and everything. There was a couple of those around, for example, at the ball, all the Secret Service guys were wearing tuxes. It was like a bunch of James Bonds running around, you know, with little earpieces. But there were not snipers. I could just imagine, you know, if it was Bush and Cheney, how it would have been locked down. It was so elegantly done.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I'm hoping and waiting for something to sing like the angels in heaven, the bones on the streets. Hoping for love to find a new voice. The song that needs singing is already in
So last night on German television, Manfred Nowak, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture, and I confess I'm not sure exactly what that word is or what it means, R-A-P-P-O-R-T-E-U-R. But anyway, he's the UN Special, whatever that is, on torture. Urged the United States to pursue former President George W. Bush and Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on charges that they authorized torture and other harsh interrogation techniques. Here's exactly what he said. Judicially speaking, the United States has a clear obligation to bring proceedings against Bush and Rumsfeld. He noted that Washington had ratified the UN Convention on Torture, which required, quote, all means, particularly penal law, to be used to bring proceedings against those who violating it. He said, and I quote, we have all these documents that are now publicly available that prove that these methods of interrogation were intentionally ordered by Rumsfeld. And, in fact, as you'll recall, a bipartisan Senate committee. And there may have been one abstention, but I think it was either unanimous or one abstention. But most of the Republicans on the committee, if not all, also voted to say that Rumsfeld bore major responsibility for the things that happened in the military detention centers at Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib, and so forth. And it's like, you know, the crimes are right there. Are we going to do something about it? Are we going to do something about it? I think we must, frankly. I think we must. And I say that not as somebody who is, you know, frothing and angry and wanting revenge or anything like that, but as somebody who wants my country to be the beacon of liberty that it historically at least has said and by many was perceived to be. Yes, I know the long list. I can give you the... You know, the Howard Zinn list of all the things that we've done wrong. And at the same time, we were founded on this principle of an idea of a higher value, of a higher of a nation that's founded on something other than just the DNA of its people. And we are, every single decade, we get closer to realizing that, with the exception of the last 8 years. And there have been a few other exceptions along the way, I'd say, with the exception of the Reagan years as well. But we're moving in that direction. And I want to see a nation where George Washington's direction to his officers to give them no cause for complaint when speaking of the British prisoners of war that were taken by the American soldiers, British prisoners of war who, as British soldiers, had tortured, murdered, and engaged in mass executions of American soldiers, George Washington said, give them no reason to complain about their treatment at our hands. This nation is better than that. And as a consequence of that, many of those British soldiers stayed here after the war and said, hey, this is my kind of country. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jim in Jackson, Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, I don't like to call, really, but I'm going to call. I want to speak, sir. I love your show. I'm glad Barack Obama is the president. He's a wonderful person. And I just want to say, I believe before the United States can go on with this brand-new deal by Barack Obama, I think it's imperative to investigate the illegal wiretapping and what Bush really did, because we don't really know what he did. Yep. And, you know, you can't put something together that's got disease or whatever. And if you look at the facts of what's happened with the economy, like a tree, you go into a forest, you cut all the trees down, and there's no trees left. 20 years later, if you planted the trees, you'd have trees. They went out there. They shipped all the jobs to foreign countries. There's no infrastructure. You got to build infrastructure up in the country. You got this Madoff deal, this Ponzi scheme, on and on. You've got Rush Limbaugh with all these radio stations, a bunch of crap. Back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, the FBI was invading people's homes, putting LSD in their food and things like this. I don't mean to bring all this up, but, you know, we have to, as an American people, just like you said about justice, about freedom for everybody, liberty, we have to investigate what this country is all about before we can go forward, because you can't put disease back in a body. You have to clean the body out. You've got to clean this country out, and you've got to investigate it for the American people, for justice, for peace, for the American way. And that's basically why I called, and
I apologize,
I'm too radical, sir.
No, you're not at all. You said it very well. And that's and it's true. It's absolutely true. If we don't investigate these crimes, and there's others that, you know, some of us are just very suspicious of. For example, I think a large part of Bush's wiretapping program, and the reason why there's 2 years worth of White House emails missing, was to spy on Democrats. Because they were spying on Democrats, and we know in the U.S. Senate, out of Orrin Hatch's office, they ran a year-and-a-half-long operation where they tapped into Teddy Kennedy and all the other Democrats, Pat Leahy and all these guys in the Judiciary Committee, tapped into their computers, read their communications every day so that they knew what their strategies were going to be when it came to the appointment of Alito. We know that the Republicans were spying on the Democrats. Orrin Hatch, on the floor of the Senate, apologized for it. Should have been prosecuted, but he apologized. So, you know, Bush is wiretapping people. Who do you think he's wiretapping? Come on. Can you spell Richard Nixon? I mean, yeah, we need to look into these things. Absolutely. Patricia in Sacramento. Hey, Patricia.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Tom, I want to begin first by saying thank God Bush is gone.
Yeah.
What a relief. But with that said, Tom, I'm calling out a concern about an article that came out yesterday in Bloomberg. I want to quote here just this quick phrase here. U.S. financial losses from the credit crisis may reach $3.6 trillion, suggesting the banking system is effectively insolvent. So for those listeners like me, Tom, who this situation seems so complex to understand, does that essentially mean that the losses of these banks are so enormous that our government cannot absorb them? What is the solution here? Do you know, how bad is this going to get?
The solution, and I'm expecting that probably this is what will happen, is that there will be a bank holiday, that they'll close the banks. They may nationalize them. If they do it right, they'll do it the way Gordon Brown did in the United Kingdom and the way that Ronald Reagan, oddly enough, did with the savings and loan. Actually, it was Bill Seidman who did it, who's a very, very competent, brilliant guy, even though he's a Republican. And basically nationalize them. You take them over. You fire the management. You get rid of all the bums who've been paying themselves millions of dollars. You say to the stockholders, sorry, you thought you'd get rich investing in this bank. You're not. You've lost your money. To the stockholders. And to the investors, to the people who have their money in there, you say, if you've got up to $250,000, I think that's what FDIC covers right now. The FDIC will cover it. And you start them over. And I think that we need to bring the full weight and force of the Sherman Antitrust Act into the banking industry as a part of the effort to re-regulate it, because we've got, these banks that are so-called too big to fail, and as Bernie Sanders says, if it's too big to fail, it's too big to exist. But Patricia, that's what I think is going to happen, and I think it's going to be a very – I think we're in for a real rough ride here.
Tom, my additional question would be, because we have the second bailout package that's coming in the next several weeks. Are you seeing that as part of Congress's plan? Because it sounds like they're just throwing money at it, and they're not really – I think Obama wants to nationalize them, but Congress has not been discussing that.
Yeah. I just don't know, Patricia. I know that $350 billion, when you've got almost $1,000 trillion of derivatives being reported by the Bank of International Settlements worldwide, when you've got possibly hundreds, certainly tens of trillions of dollars of derivatives of questionable value circulating within the United States, many of these hundreds of trillions of dollars of them denominated in dollars. Keep in mind the GDP of the entire United States is like 15 or 16 trillion a year. Of the entire planet, as I recall, is 56 trillion a year. There is so much funny money that has been created. And Kevin Phillips warned about this in his book about 5-6 years ago. He absolutely warned about this. There is so much funny and phony money that has been created that it is going to crash. And throwing $300 billion at it is nothing. It's trying to stop a charging elephant with a pea shooter. It's nothing. And we need to all batten down the hatches and get as safe financially as we can and make sure that you don't have more than $250,000 if that's the limit. It used to be $100,000. I think that they raised it up to $250,000 in any one bank, and spread the money around and have a good cash reserve. Frankly, I'm starting to sound like a Mormon here. You know, pack food in the basement. But I think it's going to be rough before it gets better. And Obama has referred to that. And this is just this is what happened the last time the Republicans ran the show in the 20s. And they cut taxes on the rich. They deregulated everything. You had a bubble economy and a crash. And this is what is going to happen this time as a consequence again of the Republicans deregulating everything in sight and dropping taxes like crazy. So, Patricia, thank you for the call. I'm sorry I don't have easy, happy, or necessarily prescient answer, but I would not rule out a bank holiday, a period where they say for a week or two, we're going to just shut the banks down and, get some people in there who know what they're doing and take these things over. We'll see. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Here's what we're talking about right now on AirAmerica.com.
What gives me the greatest hope of all is not the stone and marble that surrounds us, but what fills the spaces in between. It is you, Americans of every race and region and station, who came here because you believe in what this country can be and because you want to help us get there.
Visit AirAmerica.com for our take on these stories and much more, only on AirAmerica.com.
Barack Obama has chosen his top personnel. Now, what should be his top policies? Change for America is the first book with a comprehensive blueprint for President Obama to reset policy on the economy, healthcare, and foreign affairs. Edited by Air America President Mark Green, it describes a new progressive patriotism based on more democracy, diplomacy, and green-collar jobs. President Clinton calls it insightful, while Senator Kennedy concludes it's a brilliant roadmap for the 44th president. Change for America, available at bookstores everywhere.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party. And it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Supervita Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Supervita Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421. With Supervita Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master?
Hi, my name's Molly, inventor of the karate glove. And I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-ya!
Chop wood, concrete, trees. It can even chop through these 8 guitars.
Visit InventNow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Stefan Agier, president and founder of Green Hammer in Portland. Green Hammer's aim is environmental stewardship, maximum energy efficiency, and long-term effectiveness, while supporting our local economy. Green Hammer is the nation's first and only Forest Stewardship Council certified builder, and has received the highest LEED Platinum rating for remodels and new home construction in the country. To learn how Green Hammer is setting the standard for green building, visit greenhammerconstruction.com or call us at 503-804-1746.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and dull, or cut a 6-inch belly through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Teamster.org is their website. And welcome back. Kent in Paris, France, on the line. Hey, Kent, what's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Very well.
Love your show. Listen as often as I can. Stream it over the internet. And I've heard a few times today, including a caller, I think it was two callers back, say, thank goodness that Bush is gone. But I would like to remind Americans that he's not really gone. All the policies and whatnot are there. There's a lot of work to be done. I think more rightly we should say, thankfully, Obama is now in office and Bush is out of office.
Yeah.
And in fact,
just to put a fine point on that, one of the first executive orders that Barack Obama issued was to suspend, to stop the forward motion of any executive orders that Bush may have issued that had not yet been executed.
Oh, that's good. I hadn't heard that. I knew about him immediately stopping the trials at Guantanamo, which was good.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't know that he had this other kind of blanket one. That's very refreshing to hear.
Yeah, I'll give you the details on it in a minute. But, Kent, thank you very much for the reminder and very, very well said. I had to get to a different screen to get this information here. Doing the show from remote with just one computer is a bit of a challenge sometimes, but I do have it, and I thought it was a particularly good one. This was yesterday, actually. As one of his first acts in office, Obama ordered a freeze on new or proposed regulations by the Bush administration at all government agencies and departments. White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel issued a memo declaring, quote, no proposed or final regulation should be sent to the Office of Federal Register for publication unless and until it is approved by the new administration. And, by the way, John McCain breaking with his tragically narrow-minded ally, John Kyle, in saying, hey, let's get on with Hillary Clinton here. Stephanie, can you play that clip for us?
I think we ought to let Senator Clinton, who is obviously qualified and obviously will serve, get to work immediately.
Yeah. Amen. Carol in Phoenix. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi. You know, without evangelicals, W would not have gotten into the office. And I would like to address them with this. One of the tenets of evangelicism is that there must be repentance before there's salvation. If no matter what Jesus earned for us with his crucifixion, we need to repent in order to be saved. So we need to repent as a country for these sins that W and his outfit has committed when they were in office. And we need to acknowledge what they did. Because I don't think we can move forward in a real way unless we do. And to Dr. Phil, another famous, sickening Republican, who always says that we cannot change what we don't acknowledge. Well, we need to expose the rot that they've committed. We need to bleach it. And in judicial terms, that means investigation, trials, and punishment.
Yeah, because this involved the lives of hundreds of thousands, of millions of people. Hundreds of millions, billions of people, really, in a very real sense.
They did this in our name.
Yes.
as a country, we all wear their sin, and I don't want to wear it anymore. And you know, the most quoted part of that inauguration speech I'm going to keep in my heart forever is, a country cannot prosper long when it is only when it favors only the prosperous. Mm-hmm. It's like John Roberts, I couldn't give a quote either. A country cannot favor only the prosperous and prosper long, and that is exactly what has happened to our country.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And I hope the little people of the world get some credit for making the country and the economy move, because we sure see what happens when they go broke.
Well,
the whole country does.
Well said. Carol, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Jimmy in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man? I listen to you all the time. And I'm more of an independent, more than a Republican or a Democrat, mm-hmm. even though I did vote for Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this. I mean, I don't want to sound like a moron or anything like that on the radio especially. Since I'm independent, I kind of share views of both parties, more the Democratic Party than the Republican Party, because I think they're a real joke. But my question is as far as torture.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about this, you know, and I was kind of bringing it up. But it is, why is torture so badly looked upon? Let's say if you have a bona fide terrorist who has done harm to the American people or is looking to do harm, mm-hmm. and you want him to give you names of other terrorists, I mean, I would torture the living lights out of that person to give me, you know, what it is that he might.
Well, then you would, Jimmy. Then you would get lousy information, and you would be judged by professional interrogators as a bumbling incompetent. It works on Jack Bauer's show. You know, it works on television. But the reality is, John McCain pointed out, is that torture does not produce good information. There are techniques which don't involve torture, which are very sophisticated and do produce good information. And you know, most police officers have been trained in this stuff, you know, from the kind of good cop, bad cop, but basically building rapport with people, which can be done very quickly, oddly enough. The bottom line is that torture doesn't work. That's why it's so tragic that these guys are promoting it. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, for example, Bush was bragging about the fact that they tortured him. According to the CIA, they got, quote, no actionable intelligence, end quote, from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. In other words, they tortured the guy and they got nothing, zero, zip, nada. During World War II, we actually set up a camp here in the United States that was like a resort. It was like a resort. It was like a nice friendly place where we brought high-profile German spies and interrogated them. And we got incredible information from those guys because we were able to flip them, the same way that George Washington did with the British. Setting aside the moral argument, which is difficult to do because it's a huge argument, do we want to be known as a nation of torturers? And do we want to say to the rest of the world, hey, feel free to torture our soldiers when you get them? Setting that aside, the main argument against torture is it doesn't work.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't
know. You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
As the Firesign Theater says, maybe, I don't know, everything we know is wrong about presidential inaugurations. Ken Davis is with us, the historian and author of the popular Don't Know Much book series. His website, don'tknowmuch.com. And his most recent book, which I'm just starting to read now, America's Hidden History, a fascinating book. Ken, welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure to be on with you. Thanks for having me on this most historic of moments in America's lifetime.
It really is. What in your mind is probably the biggest misconception or misunderstanding about what happened yesterday, about yesterday's inauguration?
See, that's a good question. It's been so well documented and so well covered. By far, the most, I would imagine, the most watched inauguration in a very, very long time. I think one thing I'm quite certain of, although maybe a constitutional lawyer would say I'm wrong, is that whether or not Barack Obama took the oath of office at noon, he was still the president at noon. I believe that that's a constitutional issue, that the transfer takes over whether you have taken the oath of office or not, and whether you fumbled the first words or not, so it would seem.
And
I think there were some major butterflies there. The other misconception, I think, and it has a lot to do with the big buildup to this speech. So much attention was paid to the speech going in. And we think about, the great speeches of inaugurations past. Well, what we really remember is a line or two from each. I mean, most people would be hard-pressed to say two other things that John F. Kennedy said besides the torch is passed to a new generation, and ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. It's a long speech. He said a lot of other things in there, and some of them are very, very interesting things. Same thing with FDR's 1933 speech. Most people never get too much past the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. He then went out to lay out a very, very particular set of legislative programs that he was going to propose. It was more like a State of the Union type address than a typical inaugural. But I just think on top of everything else, I should comment, first of all, as a historian but also as an American, I just thought yesterday was one of the most remarkable and spectacular days I had ever witnessed, and I'll set my objectivity completely aside and say I was teary at the end of it. There was no question. Not blubbering. I was not that bad, but more than misty-eyed.
I was astounded. I thought it was brilliant, and it seems to me, and do a reality check for me here on this, Ken Davis. You're the historian, and you know much about what people don't know much about. My sense of it is that the classic speeches of history that we remember, and probably Kennedy is the most iconic example, is Ask Not, that at the time that they were given, people didn't sit around and go, hey, did you hear that sentence? That what happens is that as time goes on and as the significance and importance and consequence and gravity and reality of particular pieces of the speech become more and more evident and more, frankly, iconic, that they get played more and more, and we start seeing them on television over and over, hearing them on the radio over and over, hearing people refer to them over and over, and pretty soon they become famous, even though in their time, at least over the short term, they were not.
I think you're absolutely right, and probably it started with radio because for the first time things could be taped and replayed much more readily, although in the early days of radio, I'm sure that replaying a tape wasn't all that easy.
George Washington's warning against foreign entanglements that was from his farewell address, not from his inauguration.
That's correct, but
that's still an iconic
piece. It's iconic because for 200 years, people have picked up that particular line and repeated, of course. And so these things do really get imprinted on our minds, and that's why, even with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, how many people have seen more than the clip of Martin Luther King saying, I have a dream? So, there is that repetition factor and the idea that radio and then television and now obviously the internet and YouTube We can see these things in part or in whole time and time again. So they really do get impressed on our memory. And I'm sure there'll be a time that comes not too far off where people who have watched the inauguration yesterday will be sure that they were there. You know, that 1 or 2 million, or however many were jammed into the mall, will probably be 20 million, 40 years from now. Like, just like, you know, there were 10 million people at Woodstock.
Well, In the context of, and I remember it well because I was a DJ at the time, and I was short straw, what do you call it? And I got stuck being the one who had to stay at the radio station, play the live feed, and play music for 3 days, and half the rest of the radio station, it was a, you know, rock and roll radio station, half the rest of the station went off to New York. So I remember Woodstock because I wasn't there. In any case, I'm curious, and I realize this, you know, maybe you just don't know. I mean, I frankly don't know. I need to sit with this speech for a week. But I'm wondering if there are moments or parts of this speech that you think are the parts that are going to become iconic. Because my sense of it is that this speech has the potential to be one of the great inaugural speeches. Your take on Ken Davis.
A couple of things as I was watching it. I'm obviously watching it with one eye as an American watching an extraordinary moment, one eye and an ear as a historian listening for those lines. And I'd have to say what struck me is that it didn't feel like there was anything. And as I started to read it today, I thought, gee, this one might rebound a little bit more. And I think Maureen Dowd said something about one of the lines. She said, it'll be in Bartlett's, you know. So I guess that, you know, in her column today that she made that comment. The thing I was most struck by, to be honest about it, as I was listening, was I don't recall certainly any inaugural speech that so sharply rebuked the predecessor as this speech did. When you go back and look at a few of those lines about the mistakes that had been made and
one in particular, our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed.
That one and the one about expediences, you know, doing things for expedience. I mean, that was really, I thought, a very, very sharp criticism of the previous administration. And, you know, I don't know if people thought it was impolite or impolitic. I thought it was a breath of fresh air that this is a man who's not going to just say the polite thing, and he is going to say it as he sees it. So I thought that that was an extraordinary element of the speech.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there were, you know, certainly lines here and there that once you read them over, they might resonate a little bit more than they did when they were actually spoken. So my initial instinct was it's a very good speech, really brilliantly delivered. Maybe a less than brilliant speech, brilliantly delivered. Because I think you could have that speech. 10 people could have read that speech. 10 different politicians. There, you know, was enough of a sort of middle-of-the-road quality to some of it that it wasn't specifically an Obama speech. In fact, John Stewart last night had George Bush, you know, saying 4 or 5 of the same things over his presidency. So it was interesting to see it from that perspective.
Except in George Bush's case, it was his speechwriters, and in Barack Obama's case, it was coming from his heart, I would say.
Barack Obama has a speechwriter too, so.
No, but I understand. But when he says, for example, to those who cling through power, through corruption and deceit, and the silencing of dissent, know that you're on the wrong side of history, and that we will extend a hand if you're willing to unclench your fist. I think that is going to be one of those moments. Another one, you know, people will judge you. He's speaking to leaders of the world. He says to those leaders around the globe, he said, your people will judge you on what you can build, not what you destroy.
I agree, and I didn't mean to, you know, dismiss the speech as a George Bush speech. I just meant that there were lots of it that could have come from somebody else. To me, the overwhelming theme, and I think it's the theme that we missed for 8 years, was kind of going back to the Kennedy idea of do what you can do for your country.
Yep.
Being responsible, all of us rolling up our sleeves and getting some
absolutely
work done,
right. Ken, we're out of time. I'm sorry, but you're absolutely right. Don'tknowmuch.com, the website for Ken Davis's work. Thanks, Ken.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
If you owe the IRS over $20,000 in back taxes, the next 60 seconds could change your life. Nationwide Tax Relief founder and CEO, Richard Boggs.
2009 is here, and the recent federal bailout has given the IRS more power to collect back taxes than at any other time in history. However, due to our current economy, thousands of hardworking Americans who have never qualified for tax relief before now qualify. If you're tired of the wage garnishments, the bank levies, the unfiled tax returns, my team of expert tax attorneys can get you a fresh start. And we can even achieve a 50 to 90% tax debt reduction for many clients. If you owe more than $20,000 to the IRS or the state, your best opportunity to settle is right now.
For your free confidential consultation, call the attorneys at Nationwide Tax Relief at 888-477-5292. That's 888-477-5292. Call 888-477-5292 now.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11, AM 620 KPOJ, 620KPOJ.com.
Do you think we can afford a big TV like one of those 42-inch models?
Those are great, and the prices have gotten lower.
I know. I saw a Panasonic 42-inch for just $7.99 and a new Sony for $9.99. Those are really good deals.
Not so fast. We need to be careful and make sure we get the best deal. Let's look at video-only's prices for a 42-inch TV. Well, here they are.
I don't believe it. 42 inches for $6.49? That's $150 less than the other stores.
I know, and they've got Sony and Samsung and Panasonic and LG and Toshiba to choose from.
Those are the best brands. And we can get a 42-inch for $6.49.
At Video Only we can.
We better check out their TVs before we buy or...
We'll be sorry.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or computers, but you will find the best deals on HD TVs, Blu-rays, cameras, camcorders, and home theater systems. Shop around. Just make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't...
You'll be sorry.
In Jensen Beach, Clackamas, Beaverton, and Salem, Video Only. Only.
Spa. Emergency 3-day bank approved.
Spa, swim spa, barbecue, pool, and sauna liquidation.
This weekend only.
At the Portland Expo Center. Over 100 spas on display and everything must go.
Six-person spas now only $39.95.
Spa and gazebo packages 50% off.
Save thousands on the revolutionary swim spa.
See the revolutionary swim spa in action and save up to 60%.
Exercise with low impact.
Swim the entire year and stay in shape.
Teach your kids to swim.
Unwind and save thousands.
Avoid the expense and maintenance involved with a pool.
You can do it all.
Swim, exercise, and relax in your new aquatic exercise swim spa.
Installation in one day only.
Emergency 3-day bank approved.
Spa, swim spa, barbecue, pool, and sauna liquidation.
Total liquidation.
Four-person spa slashed to only $19.95.
Saunas up to 70% off.
Barbecue island 60% off.
12 months interest-free financing.
Emergency bank approved.
Spa, swim spa, barbecue, pool, and sauna liquidation.
At the Portland Expo Center.
Friday noon to 9.
Saturday 9 to 9.
Sunday 10 to 6.
Free admission.
Call 1-888-SPA-SALE.
That's 1-888-SPA-SALE.
1-888-SPA-SALE.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
And that's essentially what we're saying to the world. Welcome, strangers. Come on in. We will reach out a hand to you if you will unclench your fist. What an extraordinary metaphor. an extraordinary metaphor. Yesterday, we were discussing the possibility of somebody suing the government for misuse of our hundreds of billions of dollars. And I mentioned it a little earlier. And Jerry Lucas in Indiana is on the line. Jerry, you're the guy?
Yes, sir. I sure am.
Tell us about this.
Well, sir, you know, I am just one of those. I'm actually a nurse, and I hear a lot of people. I take care of a lot of people in the emergency rooms here in Indiana. And, you know, I worked at Ground Zero from day one, worked in Biloxi after Katrina, worked in Lake Charles after Rita. And, you know, and none of these situations have I ever asked to be paid for. But when I looked at this and I looked at the billions of dollars that nobody could tell me where it went, it's time somebody says enough's enough. And the only recourse and redress we have under the First Amendment is to file a suit. And I'm not a lawyer. I'm not trained as a lawyer. But, you know, I've just had enough because the Citibank thing is really alarming because once they're out of $20 billion, once they lose $20 billion, they've already got $57 from us, we are on the hook for $306 billion. That can't be right. We cannot allow our federal government to just let us get ripped off like this. And if somebody doesn't stand up, you know, and say enough's enough, it's just going to happen, and everybody's going to say, well, gee, maybe we should have done something.
Yeah, and just to put this in context, do the math on this, we have roughly 115 million people in the United States who work, you know, job holders. And $1 billion is 1,000 million. So $115 billion is $1,000 for every working person in America. And we're talking here now about the Fed has apparently already passed out over $2 trillion. That's $2,000 billion. And this $300 billion, 300 and change, that represents almost $3,000 for every working person in America that is going to have to be paid. And if it's paid with interest over a 10- or 20-year period, it's going to end up being $6,000 because, you know, of course, interest compounds. So, Jerry Lucas, have you built a website for your lawsuit? Is there any way that you're trying to bring other people into this, or did you just go out and do it yourself? What's going on?
Here's what I have, sir. I've been on the Internet for a long time. I have a website. I try to get more men into nursing. It's been a mission of mine just to try to get more nurses because, you know, there's a heck of a shortage out there. And,
mm-hmm.
and I also have my YouTube site, which is just and a lot of people have went and watched the videos that I put on there about the bailout and about the suit I filed. And these folks have contacted me, and I've anybody who contacts me, I'm more than happy to send them a copy. And I guess one of the people who got it evidently made sure that it got into your hands. And
yeah, I got you know, somebody forwarded it to me. So how do people find you, Jerry?
They can find me at MailNurseMagazine.com, okay. Which is, again, it's not a porn website whatsoever, sir.
Gotcha.
It is exactly what it says. It's trying to get more men into nursing. It tells a little bit about
Mail,
our history.
Mail Nurse, M-A-L-E, Nurse, N-U-R-S-E, Magazine.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Great.
And like I said, I'm on YouTube. It's Jerry, E-R-R-N. And you can see the YouTube videos, and my email address is all over the website, but I'd be happy to give it out because I have nothing to hide here. I'm U.S. public citizen, and I know once my lawsuit goes into the court, which it has already been filed, the IRS will be looking at every U.S. citizen that or anything that I've done in my lifetime. But if anybody wishes to email me and request a copy of it, it is Jerry, R-N, at dishmail, D-I-S-H, mail.net, and I'll be more than happy to forward you a copy of this so that you can look at it, because again, I've asked for nothing, not one dime for myself. I've asked for the courts to make the federal government responsible to the American people, because that is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it be amazing, Jerry, if like Vince Bugliosi suggested that hundreds, maybe thousands of local prosecutors around the country who have jurisdiction of areas where people died in Iraq or Afghanistan were to file murder charges against George W. Bush, if similarly American citizens all over the country were to follow your lead and file lawsuits saying, hey, wait a minute, what'd you do with our money?
Well, sir, you know, the biggest thing about the American public, and I learned this after working at Ground Zero, is that we tend to have a very short attention span. We look at what is in front of us right now instead of the things that are all around us. And every time I have a family member that loses somebody in the emergency room or somebody who is sick and I get to sit there and hold their hand to make their life better, that just makes me understand what I'm doing right now. And if the government comes after me and wants to look at everything I have, so be it. I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to fear. But if it makes one
I suspect with this administration, that's not going to be an issue, Jerry, because they're, well, you know, they're all about transparency, or at least they say they are.
That, and there's the case. Every government we have had before us, and that's why the lawsuit says past, present, future, and every government after, everybody says they want to do good for us, but yet we're still in a mess, and we need to correct it.
So let's start at mailnursemagazine.com, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Jerry Lucas, congratulations on filing the lawsuit and standing up. Jerry, thanks a lot for calling in. Good talking with you. 26 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Well, speaking of flying as high as you want to, we have our pigeon alert for the day.
Ghost chickens in the sky.
Yep, the good people of Bright House in Yorkshire, England, have a bit of a problem. It's all to do with pigeons. They're inundated with them, so much so that the local councillors have decided it's time to act. First, they thought about culling them, but that cost £50,000, a little too expensive. So now they come up with Pigeon Awareness Day. It only costs £10,000. Among the things they're going to do, build dovecotes so that the pigeons can nest out of the way and put contraceptives in their food. If that fails, they're going to organize expeditions to steal their eggs. Well, I could tell the folks, the good people of Bright House in Yorkshire, your real problem is probably that the British government has some sort of secret facility operating in Bright House. That's why the pigeons are there, because they're really spies from the planet Xenu, and they are checking up on you. So none of this stuff is going to work until you figure out what it is those pigeons are trying to find out. And the way that you know that they're spies from the planet Xenu, you never see dead pigeons. You never see baby pigeons. Why? Because they're robots. Okay, back to our phone lines. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Occasionally I get emails from people going, do you really believe that? Well, of course. Isn't it obvious? Alan in Miami. Hey, Alan, welcome to the show. Thanks for listening to Wins.
Okay, I appreciate what you do out there every day. I was prompted to call today because of the other phone caller from Miami who called up about torture and how, how he was ready to use it. What I neglected to mention to your screener there was that what I have to say about it, I have some firsthand knowledge of it. I was a recipient, I would say, well, of a mild form of it. I was a victim of it. And the person I was with would more so. But what I learned was that, first of all, the whole concept of using torture goes against the whole idea of justice. I mean, the torture, we're talking about, well, we have to torture the people to get information if you have a terrorist. Well, until you have a trial or some sort of evidence or some sort of process, due process, you don't know if somebody's guilty or innocent or anything about it. And so what the torture process does, it kind of cuts off that whole, you know, information part. And also it just sort of works to the interest, political interest of the people in charge. It's people who use torture are not necessarily interested in justice or proper outcome. They're just trying to cover, they're trying to be able to say that they have they've done something about it. In my case, I was in Latin America and was picked up as a suspect for a kidnapping, and had nothing to do with anything, but they just put some, you know, what they considered circumstantial evidence together. And once they decided that I was guilty, then the question was to either to beat the truth out of me or to at least be able to say, well, we've done something about it. We have some suspects.
Right. Yeah. It's, and even if you have somebody who you have an overwhelming amount of evidence that has knowledge or whatever. Again, this is the point that can't be made often enough, is that torture produces bad information. People, you know, John McCain was tortured, and what did he give them? The Green Bay Packers, you know, offensive line, as I recall, or whatever it was. He changed his story, which football team it was, depending on the city he was in, but it's, you know, during the campaign. But that, I mean, that's what happens. Torture has, it is the reason why torture is used. And thank you, Alan, for the call. It very well said. If you go back to the medieval time, and there are some great torture museums in England, in the United Kingdom in particular. There's a few others in Europe that I've seen, but the ones in the UK are masterpieces, usually in old castles. The reason that they tortured had nothing to do with getting information. It wasn't that they wanted to know something. It was that they wanted to terrify people. Torturers are terrorists. You have to understand this. This is the core concept here. Governments don't torture people to get information. There's much more efficient and effective ways to get information. Governments torture people to so terrorize the colleagues of those people, the allies of those people, that they hopefully won't engage in the behavior that would put them in the line of being tortured. And historically, it's been things like speaking out against the government, when you look at the torture that happened in the Middle Ages, or speaking out against the church. The Catholic Church was a major user of torture during the Inquisitions. It had nothing to do with getting information. It had to do with terrorizing people, with changing the behavior of people. And the fact of the matter is that over the long term, as Obama pointed out, it's not how much you destroy, it's how much you build. Over the long term, even over the short term, relatively speaking, you will get people on your side, and you will accomplish the things you want by building their lives and making their lives better, and you will ultimately lose power, and you will ultimately destroy your own country if you go down the road of simply trying to threaten people, scare people, terrorize people, and that sort of thing. I mean, anyhow. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan, listening on WDTW. Hey, Bernice, what's up?
Hi, Tom. There had been much speculation that former President George Bush would issue a flurry of pardons to Donald Rumsfeld and others just before leaving office. I wonder if he didn't do so because he truly believes that he and the others did nothing to warrant a pardon.
Could be. First of all, I don't think that we are sure yet that there were no pardons issued, although perhaps we are, but I who knows what's sitting in an envelope someplace that was day-to-day, you know, yesterday or the day before. But my take on this, and I've said this on the air a couple times, is that I think that he wouldn't pardon all these people because he wants to have pardoning himself is something that he, you know, just goes against the grain. I mean, here's the look on his face that he had yesterday when Obama was saying the things that basically were indictments of him was the look of a rich frat boy who has just been caught in a drunken prank and is sitting in the principal's or the college equivalent of the principal's office or the frat equivalent and being told, you know, we caught you, you did wrong, and just knows that nobody can lay a glove on him. You know, a friend of mine actually knew George Bush back in the day, was at his boarding school with him, and they got involved in a drunken altercation. There was a bunch of them, three, four or five of them, and got busted by the local police. And Bush walks into court without socks in his shoes and you know, just very, very casually dressed and just late and just walks up to the judge with a checkbook and says, "I just want to get this over. Tell me how much to write the check for." The judge is totally offended, you know, but that's, I mean, he had that look on his face of, you know, well, you know, I don't give a damn. So I really think that he thinks he's untouchable, but because he always has been his entire life. He's always had other people bail him out. But in the event that he's not untouchable, he's going to make sure that there are people who are going to bail him out because they're going to go to jail if they turn on him because they're all complicit in the same crime. And for that reason, he wouldn't pardon them. You think it's possible, Bernice?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Hopefully, there will be some changes. Kathy in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Kathy. Kathy?
Hello?
We lost Kathy. David in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. I was very interested in what Jerry was saying about filing that suit for the bailout. And I came across something on the Internet, maybe Huffington Post, I forget. But a couple days ago, somebody made a comment that, hey, if the Environmental Protection Agency has laws of accountability that apply to polluters and making them clean up their own toxic waste,
right,
this is being called the toxic asset crisis, you know, TARP, then why aren't we making the toxic asset polluters clean up their own mess? Made a lot of sense to me.
That's a great metaphor. That's a great metaphor. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me too, David. And again, it's going to be one of the things that I'm going to be watching most carefully, and I suspect a lot of Americans are going to be watching most carefully over the next few weeks and months, is the extent to which the criminals, I mean, the simple name, the people who robbed us, the people who robbed their investors, the people who robbed their stockholders, the people who engaged in these highfalutin Ponzi schemes using products that they referred to as derivatives, the extent to which they are being investigated and hopefully nailed. Ramsey in Oakland, California. Hey, Ramsey, what's up?
Nothing. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
It's a great day. So I out here in the Bay Area, we have like a movement for like local food production and farming and stuff like that. And like I have a landscape business, and we install gardens in people's houses and at schools and stuff like that. And Obama's like a huge hero, and I was reading in New York Times Magazine last week that he, if he was endorsed by BlackBerry, he would be worth like $50 million. You know, he obviously didn't get anything from it,
right,
but like double LeBron James and Tiger Woods. And we're making a push for him to install a garden at the White House and just start growing his own food and, you know, just have, you know, vets take care of it and disabled people take care of it. And then when you see snapshots of him showing his lifestyle, you know, with his children and stuff like that, you know, they're going to be outside growing food and eating locally.
That's a great suggestion, Ramsey. That is great. Let's bring back Victory Gardens. During World War II, they were called Victory Gardens. People were encouraged to grow gardens. Now you've got neighborhoods. We used to live in one in Atlanta where the local neighborhood regulations make it illegal for you to put a garden in your yard. let's turn the grass into food. What a great idea.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hi, Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is your ally in a bad economy. We'll make sure you're not wasting your money or unknowingly running your vehicle into the ground. We provide value by offering quality service in a logical, prioritized manner. focusing on safety recommendations first, breakdown items next, and then your maintenance needs. Trust is the main reason people use our service. Our clients know we deliver comprehensive, honest, no BS service. We won't sell unneeded or random nonsense. Our service advisors aren't paid sales commission, so you can trust they're recommending services you need, not just building a paycheck. We're an ASE Blue Seal of Excellence facility, and our technicians efficiently service your vehicle right the first time. We offer a no-hassle 18-month, 18,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service, and in this economy, our same-as-cash financing can help. Let our existing clients tell you why they choose us. Go to our website at tomdwyer.com and watch the detailed client testimonials, and call us at 503-230-2300. Please let us help you preserve your car and your cash.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421. With Superbeta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Dial 1-800-291-5421. That's 1-800-291-5421.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. One of the perks for KPOJ listeners is getting exclusive deals from our loyal advertisers. Here's one you can't afford to pass up. During January, Floor Trends Northwest is offering free basic installation on any carpet purchase over 50 yards. That's a savings of hundreds of dollars. They're also offering up to 50% off all overstock carpet and hardwood. Now is the time to take advantage of these huge discounts only for KPOJ listeners, only at Floor Trends Northwest in Selwood.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Tom Hartman here on your radio support group for We the People of the United States of America, promoting democracy 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, transforming America with our collective actions, all of us out there getting involved, all of us. Gene in San Francisco. Hey, Gene, thanks for listening to Green 960. What's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I want them to repeal that Military Commissions Act for a number of reasons. You know how it attempts to take away habeas corpus and creates those kangaroo courts. But there are also a couple of provisions in there to protect government workers who violate laws and torture people. And I think that is the reason Bush has not written those pardons, because he is pardoned because of that law.
That's interesting. That makes sense, yeah.
So I hope people will look that up and pursue that and also call for a repeal of the Military Commissions Act.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you, Gene. Thank you very
much
for the call. I appreciate it. Mike in Dallas. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. The first about the person you interviewed on the government bailout. Mm-hmm. The numbers that I have calculated are actually much, much higher for the cost per taxpayer.
Okay.
I did these calculations about a month ago. Thus far, the government has committed a total of $9 trillion. And you're not hearing that on the mainstream media, but those are the facts. If you add up all the numbers,
okay, we know about $2.5 trillion that the Fed has pumped out, and
well, that's right. That's what they've dispersed thus far, but they've also guaranteed over $3 trillion in terms of the money market mutual funds, commercial paper, many other things. It's over $9 trillion if you tally everything up. And in my estimate, it's going to be ultimately $15 to $16 trillion by the time it's all done.
Okay, so take, let's just take 10 trillion as a nice even number and divide it by, say, 100 million working people. That's I can't do math that fast.
It's a ton of money.
Seems like it's either $100,000 or $1 million a person.
Right. But the problem is, of course, that's if you pay it today. You have to amortize that. Typical payoff period is 30 years. Right. Rule 72 is going to give you a much, much higher number, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe around $400,000. On the flip side of this, the good news is, if there is any, is that, in my opinion, as I'm sure you can appreciate, a massive inflation period is on the horizon because of all this money being pumped out. I think that the government is going to continue to intentionally pump out this money, debase the currency, so it can pay off the debt more readily down the road. Because it's going to be the only way.
Do it the same way Germany did with the Treaty of Versailles. That's a pretty awful remedy, though, because the people who get whacked the hardest are the people who on fixed
incomes.
It is,
but you know what the other choice is, in my opinion? Unfortunately, war, just like we pulled ourselves out of the First Depression.
I would submit to you, World War II did not bring us out of the Great Depression. That we were actually moving in that direction in a very healthy way. Thank you very much. And that war, while it was a short-term stimulus, primarily because it created jobs, and we had full employment during World War II, but We actually slowed down our recovery from the Great Depression as a result of that war, because so much material was dropped on Germany and Japan that could have been used for bridges and buildings here.
Right. I'm not speaking of the war in terms of increasing the productivity. I'm speaking of the effects of the war. After the war, that was America's great booming period in the 50s, because there was no competition. Everything was made in America. People bought everything from around the world, from America, whether it were toasters, vacuum cleaners, TVs. And so that's kind of more what I'm speaking of, is that it positioned us as the standalone leading world economy, because there was really no competition.
Exports did not become a massive part of our economy in the 1950s. You're right, much of Europe's industrial infrastructure was destroyed. But with the Marshall Plan, what we did was, instead of selling them our stuff, which is how Japan, for example, as a matter of policy, does their foreign aid programs, they give countries money to buy Japanese goods and specify that it has to be Japanese goods in many cases. Instead of doing that, what we did is we helped them rebuild their own industrial infrastructure and their own economies. And so their companies came back. You didn't see a huge export boom during the 1950s. In fact, there were two recessions during the 1950s.
But that was our great period. That was America's greatest economic period when you look at living standards and so forth.
Actually the 60s was probably more so, from 55 to 65.
That was the beginning.
I think we can probably agree on that.
We can go back and forth, but the point is that, those are really the two options. I'm not saying my opinion. I'm just saying I think what the government ultimately will look at. In terms of the accountability that you were mentioning, it's not going to change. All these guys are going to get away with the same stuff. I deal with the SEC all the time, and I know how they work. And the fact is that while there's wonderful people over there, they're caught up in a bureaucracy because of the way the system is structured. The chairman is a presidential appointment.
That was the bad news for 8 years. That's the good news now.
but here's
one other option, Mike, and that's bankruptcy. That's the country doing what Argentina did and saying, we're just not going to make payments on our debt.
Well, we don't need to do that. You know why? Because we've got the guns.
We don't need to do that, because our currency is pretty much the reserve currency for the world, and we can print more of it, which brings us back to your option number one, which was inflation.
Right. But that's another problem, though, Tom, because the world is starting to look at our currency and our ability to pay back our debt as a much higher risk.
You're right. No, and they're starting to run in the other direction. I mean, you had Mike, thanks a lot for the call. We're out of time. Germany had an auction a week or so ago that failed, bond auctions. I mean, if that happens with the United States, we're in deep trouble. Coming up tomorrow, Tony Blankley, author of a new book, American Grit, What It Will Take to Survive and Win in the 21st Century. He says Obama's administration is a potential disaster. That should be an interesting conversation. Dan Gaynor, the Business Media Institute, is going to drop by. We're going to talk about climate change. And, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, activism, democracy, it all begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.